Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and thank you for joining me. We've heard many conversations on WBOI Presents this year about women in politics. How do women fare in races for the Indiana General Assembly or statewide offices? What work still needs to be done for women to become more civically engaged? We'll hear from advocates, students, and elected officials in an avow civil conversation. We may not agree, but we can still have a civil conversation. Avow has been bringing events of this type to Fort Wayne for several years now, and last month held a virtual event focusing on women in politics. Thank you to Avow co-founders Patty Hayes, Rachel Tobin-Smith, Marilyn Moran Townsend, and Faith Van Gilder for organizing Avow events in our community. And the next voice you'll hear will be Patty Hayes introducing the event and the speakers to come. Enjoy.
Welcome, everybody. On behalf of Avow, I want to welcome everyone to our hybrid civil conversations. Not quite the same as what we've been able to do over the past few years, but with the continued generous support of Journal Gazette Foundation, we want to keep the civil conversations going even during these times of COVID. And Zoom meetings, thank you very much. I'm just sorry I didn't invest in them in it sooner. Allows us to keep that going. Just a reminder to everyone, this is being recorded. It will be broadcast later over WBOI. I'm going to go ahead and start with introductions of our speakers. First up, I'll report these in the order they are presenting. First speaking tonight is Whitley Yates. Whitley is the Director of Diversity and Engagement for the Indiana Republican State Committee, where she's responsible for developing connections with diverse groups across the state. Her goals are to increase the diversity of party membership, expand the ranks of minority and women elected officials throughout the state, and to look for creative ways to engage future Hoosier leaders of diverse backgrounds. She was press secretary for mayoral candidate Jim Merritt and is founder of the Niche Agency in Indianapolis. Second will be Harriet Miller. Harriet is a feminist activist in Fort Wayne since the 1970s. She was one of the founding mothers of Fort Wayne Feminist, Fort Wayne Women's Bureau, Run Jane Run, I miss that, Harriet, and Harmony Associates. She spent her adult life speaking out, agitating, organizing, testifying, writing, and marching to protect the rights of women. She's marched for peace, she's marched for civil rights, for women's rights, for LGBT rights, and for reproductive rights, and not just in Fort Wayne. Harriet believes that we must continue to resist, insist, and persist. The future looks bright and promising because women are louder, stronger, and more powerful nationally and internationally than ever before. Then Ashley Martin. Ashley is an 18-year-old senior at Bishop Dwenger. She's always been interested in politics, and during the 2016 presidential election, she started doing her own research that led her to start Teenage Republicans in Allen County in January of 2019. She's been president of that group for 2.5 years, which has led to opportunities to become extremely involved in local and state Republican Party activities, door knocking, phone banking, attending and speaking at numerous political events resulted in an invitation from Senator Todd Young to serve as a U.S. page. And she happened to serve during President Trump's impeachment. And finally, Cherish Pryor. Representative Pryor is a Democratic member of the Indiana House of Representatives, representing District 94 since 2008. While born in Holly Springs, Mississippi, she's a graduate of Fort Wayne's Southside High School. She attended IU Bloomington for criminal justice and then graduated from IUPUI with a master's in public affairs. She began her political career as a member of the Indianapolis City County Council and is currently Democratic floor leader, member of both Ways and Means Committee and the Local Government Committee. She's also a member of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. I think we've put together a very diverse panel tonight and looking forward to hearing from each one of you. So Whitley, you're going to kick us off tonight in covering the history of women in Indiana politics.
All right. I'm so excited to be here and thank you so much for inviting me. And what a phenomenal topic at the right time in the right month as we celebrate Women's History Month. I usually like to start with the data and the statistics of where we are now. So when it comes to women in politics in Indiana, a lot of people would look at where we are and say we've done a phenomenal job. Here are some of the numbers. Out of the 50 Senate seats that are available in Indiana, 7 are held by women. Of the 100 House of Representatives seats, 22 are held by women. Of the 9 congressional districts that we have, only 2 are held by women. When it comes to statewide elected women, we do a much better job. There are 7 statewide offices, and there are 5, and that's if we include the superintendent of public instruction, which is new, with the Secretary of Education. If we include that one, it's 5. If we don't, then it is 4. And so when we are talking about history and women in history in Indiana, we can see that in a lot of these fields, we're not even at 25%. Of the population when it comes to the elected position. However, when we're looking at the statistics and the data of women in Indiana, we're over 40%. And so 40% in population, but we don't even make up 25% of the elected officials. And so when looking at Indiana and the history of women in Indiana, it actually starts a really long time ago. In 1865, we had Helen Gugger become one of the first women to argue before the Indiana Supreme Court on her own behalf in the case of appealing her right to vote in an 1894 election. And so the case was filed in Tippecanoe County, and she actually won her case in 1895. So that is honestly one of the first instances of women fighting political battles within our state. Then we move to 1907. We have Valentine Schaefer. So Valentine Schaefer became the first woman elected to the Allen County Council. And that was in 1907. Now, of course, we all know what happened as we celebrated the centennial of the woman's suffrage and the right to vote. So in 1920, January 16th, 1920, the Indiana legislature ratified the 19th Amendment and allowed women the right to vote. And so in November then of 1920, Julia Nelson of Delaware County, which is for my Muncie folks out there, became the first woman to ever serve in the General Assembly as a member of the House of Representatives, which was obviously a major accomplishment considering that the right to vote was only granted in January. And by November, Julia Nelson became one of the first representatives. And then we also have Miss Anna Monroe. My daughter's name is Monroe, and so that holds a special place in my heart. But she was the first woman to be able to vote in Indiana after the passage of the 19th Amendment. And so moving through that, then you have Elizabeth Rainey of Marion County, who became the first woman officially elected to her seat in the Indiana House of Representatives. You have Grace Urban. She was appointed as the state treasurer. She was the first female state treasurer in 1926. And then she was also reelected in 1928. In 1927, we have Miss Fern Ale, who becomes the first woman to serve as Secretary of State. And as many of you know, we have Connie Lawson, who just resigned from her position, and she is leaving. And now we have Holly Sullivan as the new Secretary of State. But we had our first female Secretary of State in 1927. We have Mary Donovan, in 1940, she became the first woman to ever run for governor. And this is 1940, which is 20 years after women gained the right to vote. Now, mind you, in 1940, African-American women still did not have that right to vote. We weren't able to hold these places and positions yet, any women of color at that point. We have Arcata Stark, who became the first woman elected to the Indiana Senate, and that was in 1942. And so that goes on, and we see the first African-American elected woman, Daisy Lloyd. She's the first African-American woman elected to the House of Representatives to serve in the General Assembly, which is in 1965. And for people who don't know, while the women's suffrage did happen in 1920 and the women gained the right to vote, Black women were still deprived that right until 1964. And so to have the first African-American elected representative 1 year after that is where our history really begins when it comes to being elected in the state of Indiana. And so kind of hearing from the 1800s until where we are right now in 2021, and we're still not 25% of the electorate, it's a little sad. And so there's so much room to grow, and there's a lot of opportunity. I think that a lot of times, specifically women in politics are usually told what they should be doing and how they should be maneuvering through the system, what they should run for or if they should run, or how they can usually be supported or support staff for other people. And I think that we are in an age and a time where we should not have to wait for people to ask us to take upon our civic duties and our civic responsibilities to impact change beyond measure within our communities. And whatever those groups may be in, I think a lot of people say you have to ask a woman to run, and then you just have to ask a man what he's going to run for, right? And I think that we have to shift that paradigm to where we are advocating for not only women, but we are advocating for other people to be civically involved consistently, as well as holding our elected officials accountable who say that they advocate for women, women's rights, and holding them accountable to make sure that the things that they do are intentional so that we can continue shattering the glasses, breaking down the barriers, and moving forward.
Harriet, you're next up.
Well, hey, gee, Whitley, you gave a really good background on what's happening across the state. And a lot of women have done a lot of work during our lifetime and prior to that. I'm just thrilled that you've invited me to speak about my favorite topic, women in Fort Wayne in politics. We have a long history of women who've contributed to the common good. They've either done it as elected or appointed officials, or they have done it as private citizens, providing leadership and innovation and change. But we have never had equal representation at the table. The table where policies are created, decisions are made, legislation is written, laws are enforced. So I see today as an opportunity to examine what our foremothers were able to accomplish with the background that Whitley just provided us with, where we are today, and how we can improve the future going forward. So I thought, let's just look specifically at the history of Fort Wayne. And as you mentioned, we did get the vote in 1920. And in 1921, Fort Wayne elected our first woman to city council, Catherine Dinklage. Hooray for us. We did. We got right on the bandwagon. But it took another 43 years before the next woman was elected. And that was Celia Fay, and she was elected in 1964. And between 1964 and today, we have elected exactly 8 more women. We did a milestone in 2019 when we had our first 2 African-American women elected to Fort Wayne City Council, and most of us on this phone panel, on this Zoom call, worked to get them elected, Michelle Chambers, Sharon Tucker. Hooray for us all. But yet, the grand total of women over 100 years, 10. In Fort Wayne, women represent 50%, actually, I think it's 51 plus of the population. So hooray for us. We have power. We have the power of 51%. Of course, the big challenge is how are we going to use it? Well, let's look how those numbers have worked for us for city council. I did this figuring. Over 100 years since our first woman was elected, there have been most likely 25 city council sessions, opportunities to get elected, because every 4 years we run another election. And right now we have 9 members on council, so I assume that probably we had 9 members all along. And that would mean that over the last 100 years, there were 225 opportunities to elect someone to city council, and we elected 10. Women had 4.4% representation on Fort Wayne City Council over the past 100 years. Not good. Not good at all, Fort Wayne. All right. Well, maybe we did better in Allen County. I looked up the facts, and in Allen County, we had 200 elected positions in the last election, ranging from the congressman all the way down to township trustees and school board members. And we had a total of 58 women who took over those 200 positions. 29%. Still need room for improvement. Well, maybe we'll do better with boards and commissions. After all, that's another opportunity for women to have some say at the table. So I looked about at your research that you did in 2020. And in that research, I saw that you reviewed 81 seats that were appointed to boards and commissions. And lo and behold, according to your statistics, women got 15 of those seats. 18.5%? Oh boy, that's really pathetic. Sharon Tucker, when she was interviewed in June of 2020, said, "In a city this size, I'm saddened that we don't have representation, more representation, women and minorities. In some of these boards, it's still all men, all white men. And while there are some women, the majority of those are also white." She said, "I think we need to have diversity all across the board. African-American men and women, but also Burmese men and women, Hispanic men and women. We need to make sure we're reaching out to have the boards represent the communities that they're serving." I know, it's depressing. However, while women do not have equal and fair representation in politics and in elected positions, Fort Wayne women have always been strong leaders and activists for change. And I've just got a few examples. If you had given me 5 hours, I could have given you more, but I know I'm limited. Let's go back to about 1780s, 1790s, Tecumwa, the matriarch of the Miami tribe. She owned property that was vital to canal trade. And that was during a time when females were not available, were not able to have ownership of land. She was our region's first highly successful businesswoman. In the 1880s, Emerine Holman Hamilton started reading rooms, the beginning concept of a library, the forerunner of the Allen County Public Library. And she gave land to the first Negro church in Fort Wayne. 1915 came Minette Baum, who brought social service to Fort Wayne. She created a settlement house in her home, creating activities for children and adults, the blind, immigrants. She was concerned about juvenile delinquents. She raised funds to ensure that social workers and social services were provided both to government agencies and many of the private agencies or the not-for-profit agencies that exist today in Fort Wayne. She initiated the concept of social work. In the 1920s, Marjorie D. Whitcliffe the most respected Black woman in Indiana, founded the Wheatley Center here in Fort Wayne, bringing educational and recreational opportunities to youth and adults. And her efforts today are the forerunner of Fort Wayne's Urban League. As we move into the 20th century, women have continued being agents of change. Of course, this evening's host, Avow, has been a major mover in far as empowering women to become more politically active in public life, conducting civil conversations like the one we're having tonight, and conducting training seminars for women interested in being a candidate for elective office or being part of a candidate's team. And the scorecard, I think, currently 45 women completed training, and about alumni and faculty have won a total of 33 primary and general election races, with 8 elected in a general election, and that doesn't even count the number of committee delegates and precinct committee women who have been elected. I urge all of you who ran such brilliant campaigns, just keep running. If you don't get elected the first time, run again and again. I think Michelle Chambers, I heard her speak the other day, ran twice. She ran in 2015, she lost. So she came back strong in 2019 and she won. Never stop running. Another organization that's very active in Fort Wayne is Changemakers, committed to amplifying and uplifting the voices and concerns of the Black community, working to disrupt and dismantle systems of racism in Fort Wayne, fighting for greater equity and inclusion in the city during this historic time. Another new organization, Wolfpack. I love the initials. Women United for Progress, Allen County. And they already have over 4,000 members with 2 goals: political activism to continue and increase women's impact on local politics, and community services, joining with other organizations like Forward Indiana, who has the pantries around town, to serve our food insecure families and individuals. And of course, the League of Women Voters, who has been with us since we got the vote in 1920, nonpartisan, encouraging informed and active participation in government, works to increase the understanding of major public policy issues. What a job that is. So our future depends upon women being at the table as decision makers for wage equality, healthcare, education, childcare, criminal justice, the environment, everything. We need women there making decisions that impact our life. Inequality is expensive, and women pay the price. This blows me away. Estimates vary on how much the wage gap will cost an American woman over the course of her career. The National Women's Law Center puts it at over $406,000 in lost income on average, but that number can top $1 million for Hispanic women, Black women, Native Americans. Oh, that is depressing. I urge all of you attending tonight, use your voices, become change makers, speak up to the decision makers, become the decision makers. We want full and fair representation. Increase our seats at the table so that when we come back in a couple of years, Whitley and I can report a landslide of women, so many we can't even name them all, just give you numbers. Try running for elective office. Participate in one of the training programs at our office. Volunteer to elect other women to work on their campaigns. Apply for a seat on a local board or a commission, and support any of the existing organizations working for change. And I'll give you one big thing that you can do right now, because right now is the moment for more diversity in Allen County, with the opportunity for Lori K. Morgan to become the new judge to the Allen County Superior Court. Insist that Governor Holcomb appoint the county's first Black woman judge, Lori K. Morgan, who's been a magistrate in the Allen County Superior Court for 26 years. This is our moment for change. And I just want to end to remind you what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said. She said, when I'm sometimes asked, when will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? And my answer is, when there are nine, people are shocked. But there have been nine men, and nobody's ever raised a question about that. Ruth Bader Ginsburg's response is breathtaking. But you know, what about nine women on the Fort Wayne City Council? Now that would be a breath of fresh air.
Thank you. I think we've heard a lot about women being active and organizing on social issues. And the question is, you know, how do we get that translated to elected office? The history of women are there. How do we get that moved to elected office? And that's our next two speakers who are going to focus on that issue of why aren't more women involved and how do we change that specifically for public office? Ashley Martin. Thanks, Ashley. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. First off, I'd just like to say thank you so much for asking me to speak tonight. When Amanda reached out to me about doing it, it was very unexpected, but I've been looking forward to this very much so. But anyway, my name is Ashley Martin. I am 18 years old, and I am a senior at Bishop DeWanger High School in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Growing up, I was never politically involved, but I constantly heard my grandpa and my mom discussing the current political topics at the time. But that was about it. Every time they did talk about it, though, it always intrigued me. So I started doing my own research, especially during the presidential election in 2016. That's when 2 years ago, I decided to start a teenage Republican chapter in Allen County. I told some people about it and they looked at me like I had about three heads. I decided to not listen to them because I felt in my heart that this was right. This was especially important to me because so many times we see people my age or around my age feeling like they automatically have to lean a certain way politically. I wanted to start this group to allow anyone to come to be able to hear all kinds of speakers, such as elected officials, community leaders, and more, to choose what their political views are after hearing from many different people to become more educated on the topics. Social media tends to be a huge proponent in allowing information to be distorted or shared without knowing the full context of what happened. When I first met with the chairman of the Republican Party, Steve Shine, though, I never once thought that I would be in the position I am today. Steve asked me to give a speech at a Lincoln Day dinner that April in front of about 400 people. So I wrote all my beliefs on a document and explained thoroughly why I am so passionate about my beliefs. Since that speech, I've been on the radio multiple times, mostly WoWo with Pat Miller, and even was asked to do an interview with a national news station in Canada and Denmark. And I've given multiple speeches at events, including at the Trump boat parade hosted by my group at Lake James in Angola that had almost 1,000 boats. It felt so good to be able to see thousands of patriotic Americans that loved President Trump so much. Even despite, you know, what your political views are, it was just good seeing how I think on both sides, being able to see parades happen and have so many people get together. I've also door knocked on thousands of doors and made thousands of calls for phone banking, which I truly believe helped me tremendously in getting noticed more by elected officials, because I do not just want to attend the fun events. I want to completely indulge myself in interacting with the voters to see what they care about. I thoroughly enjoyed so many of the conversations I had going around the neighborhoods and even being able to do it with other teenage Republicans or other women such as Amanda Muldoon, Lindsay Hanna, and more that made it so much more fun. In the fall of 2019, I got a call from Senator Todd Young's office asking if I would be interested in serving as a U.S. Senate page in Washington, D.C. in the spring semester of 2020. Of course, my initial reaction was absolutely yes, but I kind of kept my expectations low just in case it did not work out because I pretty much knew no details and it seemed a little far-fetched at the time. Soon after that, though, I was officially chosen by Senator Young's office. So I was off to DC in January of 2020. Thinking back on my experience as a US Senate page, it overjoys me knowing how much I saw and the experience I had. But it also saddens me because it's over. I found my in-group. I found 29 other incredible teenagers from around the country who really understood me. And I found my best friends. we were able to experience being away from home for the first time together. We experienced the impeachment trials of President Donald J. Trump together. We experienced the State of the Union address together, and we experienced growth of ourselves together. For once, I felt as if I was in my element, and that excites me beyond my imagination knowing for my future plans. My experience of being a U.S. Senate page went quick, as we were sent home early due to COVID-19, but it also changed my life forever. Something that I believe a massive number of people struggle with today is looking past the politics and the negativity around it, and instead looking at the person inside. I truly got to know these other pages and did my best to listen to why they believe what they believe, and we compared stories. This is how I would like to see my entire generation and every other generation act, because we are able to hold our composure together more than even most politicians we see on TV today. I also learned that I'm even more passionate about my beliefs than I ever knew I was. My goals and my ambition were able to be amplified, and after having the opportunity of living in Washington, D.C. for a couple months, I will do anything to ensure I get back there. It was definitely hard staying super involved in the party this past year with so many events being canceled due to COVID, but that did not stop me from door knocking, phone banking, and continuing to build my connections and relationships with the party. I started working with a young man from North Carolina named Tucker Coombs, who was also in high school, to jumpstart a national organization called the U.S. Youth Congress. I ended up helping him change it to only a U.S. Youth Senate, as it was very difficult to find so many qualified members all at once. The way it is being run is we have 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats, two from each state, that will act as youth senators. There is also a president of the U.S. Youth Senate, which I was actually elected to by Republicans and Democrats a couple of months ago. I will serve as the tiebreaker vote since we will have an equal number on both sides of the aisle. But because I was elected, Republicans now have the majority. I'm really looking forward to this as we have the opportunity of introducing legislation to pass it through the Youth Senate, and then we will send it, the legislation passed, to the U.S. senators for them to hopefully propose it in the real U.S. Senate. I've spoken with both Congressman Banks and Senator Young about it, and luckily we have their full support. This is a great way for more young people to become involved and for elected officials to hear from the youth's perspective, especially with having so many people on both sides of the aisle work together to make change for the future of our country. I believe this could also set a precedent for the future generations, since we have such a large division amongst the two political parties. Just with this being started, I've already had the opportunity of getting to know so many more people from all around the country. I'm even meeting up with a couple in 2 weeks in North Carolina. We are going to work in their state capital for a couple days as well. Some of the relationships I built locally, on the state level, and on the national level are incredible. I truly am so thankful for everyone I have met and the help they have given me to get to this point. This brings me to how we can influence more women to get involved. Looking at everyone here just inspires me. I also look at all the amazing women we have seen serve in the White House or our current elected officials now, such as Senator Marsha Blackburn, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, Candace Owens, and more. Even AOC is a young woman who has clearly made a huge impact in so many young girls' lives. So even being able to focus on the person and what they have done instead of their political views is so important. These are some of my biggest inspirations. And even on the local level, being able to see Lindsay Hanna, Amanda Muldoon, Nicole and Lana Keasley, the two women who just spoke right before me, and so many other strong, powerful women lead, has had a huge impact on me. I truly think the more we as women make our voices heard, the more people we can inspire to join us. I've built up my social media platforms quite a bit, especially on TikTok, and I have a lot of girls reach out to me saying they want to get politically involved as well, which has made me feel so good because it makes me know that I can hopefully make a change in the world too, even just as an 18-year-old girl. This brings me to another point, because a lot of times we think age defines your knowledge or your character, but it definitely does not, which I think actually discourages some women from getting involved. We need all kinds of ages together because we can all learn from each other while also preparing the younger generations to be the next leaders of the United States. Another thing is how rude so many can be, especially on social media. We see thousands of people, if not millions, who stereotype others purely based on their political views, skin color, even hair color, and more. Why are we allowing this to happen? Since when have we allowed our political views to define who we are? This is our chance as women to change this and start normalizing civil discussions to be had, just like this today. I have had some fantastic conversations with people on the complete opposite political spectrum than me because we didn't make it personal. We tried to understand where each of us were coming from. A lot of these conversations have been with other women. We need to be supporting each other because we cannot let a bump in the road separate us or different policy views stop us from encouraging more women to be involved. We can look at everything women have already accomplished and focus on adding to those accomplishments day by day. It is time for more women to take a leap of faith and allow everyone to see how powerful we can be. And with us making our voices heard, we will inspire more to join us. I truly believe with God leading us, we are unstoppable. All in all, I've absolutely loved being so involved at such a young age, and I cannot wait to see what my future will bring because I have kept God close to my heart at all times. And I know that without his help, I would not be here right now. In the future, I do plan to run for 3rd District Congresswoman in Indiana, hopefully in 2028, which we've never had a woman be the representative of this district. So I hope to be the first. Some may think that having these aspirations to run for office at such a young age could be deemed unrealistic, but I know that my drive, work ethic, and perseverance will guide me towards this goal. I will work twice as hard as I did before to continue achieving my dreams, and I'm so thankful to see so many more beautiful women here today to inspire me to be the best leader possible. Thank you so much, and I look forward to building more relationships with each one of you.
Thank you so much, Ashley. Our final speaker tonight, Representative Cherish Pryor. Representative Pryor?
Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much, Fort Wayne, for inviting me to participate in this panel. I really appreciate it, even though I represent Indianapolis as District 94. Fort Wayne still has a special place in my heart as well. So when we're counting the number of people who represent Fort Wayne, I'm often counted as another member of that legislative body. So thank you all so much. A lot of information has been given, and I just wanted to break down some of that those numbers a little bit more. When you look at the number of Democrats, there are 29 Democrats, and women Democrats are the majority. So our caucus in the House has a majority of women. Still not good enough, but out of 29 members, there are 15 women and 14 men. And so on the Republican side, that's just 7 women out of 71 men. And so we still have a long way to go, because even as we're looking at the totality, the total number of women is still not large enough. And so while in the Democrat caucus, we have a lot of women to speak up and express our views, and we certainly have the majority vote, we also want to make sure that we have women within the Republican Party as well, that where they have more women that are there and that are able to speak up as well. So I always get encouraged when I see more Republican women run and win office, just as I do when we have Democrat women run and win office, because I know that women, when you have women, we're often more qualified, we often build better consensus, and we always get better public policy when women are at the table, involved, engaged in running various committees. And as I look at the landscape of when will it be enough for women, when there are no more firsts for women, you know, we got kind of close with Kamala Harris being vice president. And so we're always doing a history making. And I have 2 books that I'm going to hold up the front page of these books that actually I'm going to be giving to my nieces. And this one here, if you can see it, If I Were President. And that little girl, beautiful little girl sitting at the table there, that's what we need to be striving for as women, this little girl right here. and not if I were president, but when, as I am the president. So that's one book for my little niece. And then this one is precious to me as well, because I have a niece named Grace. And this one says, Grace Goes to Washington. And so we need to be encouraging all our little girls to participate in the process and go to Washington and participate as pages, as interns. The exposure for little girls, getting them involved at a young age, really sets the stage for women, for them when they become women, to be engaged in the process. And for me, I will say, kind of give you a little bit of my story. My story began in Holly Springs, Mississippi, as was stated by Patty. My grandmother, she never ran for office. She never held office, never got appointed to anything, but she was very involved in our community, getting people registered to vote, working the polls, participating in rallies, participating in protests. And she always had my aunt and I with her. I certainly didn't know at that time what she was doing because I was young. I was maybe 6, 7, or 8 years old. But for me, the thing for me was, I knew at some point in that day, we were going to stop by the store and I would have a Coke, a bag of potato chips, and a candy bar. And so for some of you who know older people, generally, you don't get, we didn't get junk food. Junk food was generally a special time. So for me, that's what that day meant. A Coke, a bag of potato chips, and a candy bar. That was my excitement. But those things that she did, it really stayed with me. And so as I got older, it just began to materialize and crystallize what she was actually doing. She was getting people involved in the political process. She was campaigning and canvassing for people that she felt would do a good job, who she felt should be in office. And those things stuck with me for the rest of my life. And I always tell my grandmother, she's the reason why, for the good or the bad, I am an elected official. The question was asked, why aren't more women involved? You know, I think women need to stop asking for permission and start asking for forgiveness. Just do it. We cannot wait for someone to ask us to run for office, because oftentimes men do not want to give up their seat. Oftentimes men have other individuals who they want to take their place. Most of the time it is not women. So we cannot wait for a man to ask us. We just have to do it. We just have to run. And we always say, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. Because if you ask for permission, you're probably going to hear a no. And men oftentimes don't see anything wrong with men running everything. So you have an elected body of 20 men. They see nothing wrong with all men being a part of the process. But I guarantee you, if they looked up and they saw all women, they will be wondering where their representation is. So that's too often how they operate. The other thing that I wanted to address is women, we often get involved in politics for someone else versus ourselves. We're always volunteering on somebody's campaign, being the finance person for that campaign, being the campaign manager, being the communications person, but we oftentimes don't see ourselves as that person to run for office. When in actuality, we're always more qualified, and we're doing all of those things. We already know what it does, what it needs to be an elected official and to be successful at that. And then the other challenge I think that some women see is, where is the money going to come from? because when you're elected official, you do have to raise money. And women, if you're like me, I hate asking for money for myself. It is so much easier for me to ask for money for someone else. I can call all day for someone else or for a cause that I believe in. But when you say, Cherish, call for yourself, that's much harder for me. But it does take money. But as women, just like I've done, I have to come out of my comfort zone. And sometimes as women, we feel more comfortable maybe not asking for the money or not running for office. We have the ability to hold these offices and do a phenomenal job at it. And what can we do to change that? Just do it. You know, the Nike slogan is the best slogan there is out there. Just do it. Don't let anyone tell you you can't. People will come up with all reasons and excuses. Well, you have a family. What are you going to do? You're going to have to work this out. Why don't you wait? People, there are excuses upon excuses upon excuses. Men don't use those excuses. They just run. But women, you know, we listen to those naysayers versus just running for office with the understanding is there's so much help out there. As women, we have to support one another as well. And that's really important. I know, I think maybe it was Heather that was talking about they helped and worked Michelle and Sharon Tucker get elected for office. But the support of women, the women organizations that are out there that's just waiting for other women to run for office. So the support is out there. We just have to come from our comfort zone and run for office and not be discouraged by the men or other. And sometimes it may be some women as well, quite frankly, that may try to be discouraging of us, but we have the ability to do it. And when we do it, we do a better job. And I will also say this, when it comes to African-American women, the numbers are worse as well. And for Latino women, we have no Latino women in the state legislature right now. We have 7 African-American women, and 6 of those are in the House and 1 in the Senate. I'm a member of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus as well, and we have 14 members. And of those 14 members, the Black Caucus is really divided evenly. We have 7 men and 7 women. So our representation in the Black Caucus is really good because it's 50-50. However, that representation is not so well in the Senate because we only have 1 African-American woman and 4 and 3 African-American men. So from the standpoint of the minority community, we still have a long way to go, particularly when it comes to women and the disparities that we have. I think we all know that when you have a more diverse group of individuals, when it's a diverse group in age, when it's a diverse group in gender, when it's a diverse group in ethnicities, we come up with better public policy all the times because all perspectives are taken into consideration. And so that's really, I think, where we have to get to a place to be at. So for me, I would say that anyone that is wanting to run for office, just do it. Figure out what offices are available, what you want to do, get your game plan and do it. Don't just settle for helping someone on their campaign, being a campaign manager, being a communications person, or being a finance person, because you will be doing that for the rest of your life and someone else will be in the position of holding the seat and voting on public policy when you're well qualified to do that. So don't just settle for that. Pick up the mantle and take the opportunity and run for office because we need more women at the table.